Coming up this time, memories of Brian Clough, the goal scorer.
He latched onto a through ball. He was running towards the penalty area. He flicked the ball over his head, over the defender, and volleyed it in. If that had been caught on film, it would have been replayed over and over again. It was an amazing goal.
And the injury which would change football history.
I was there. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I was at that game. Yes, I was at that end, actually. I saw it quite clearly. Yeah, I mean, I could see he was in pain, obviously.
There's also a former Cloughy player reflecting on a memorable reunion with his teammates.
That was spectacular. Not only seeing the players, but the fans. They were bringing autograph books from those years and showing me the autographs I'd signed all those years ago.
And you'll hear from a fellow podcaster and how I was on the other end of the questions.
I've listened to a number of your episodes and I really like your style and the fact that you focus in on that niche of Brian Clough and all the people who he's worked with and known a lot throughout the years. And how much have you enjoyed it, though? That's the question. You know, how much have you enjoyed it, just getting in touch with all these different people?
All that and a lot more coming up in this episode.
This is Alan Hinton on the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Alton.
Yes, it's the Green Jumper, and to kick things off this time, I'm pleased to welcome someone who remembers watching Cloughy as a player. Jim Wales has special memories of Brian when he was the centre forward for Sunderland.
I saw most of his games at Roker Park, actually. The first time I ever saw him was the first time I went to Roker Park on my own, as it were. I was 15 years old, and he scored a hat trick. That was his first hat trick. He ever scored for Sunderland.
Oh, wow.
And as well as that, that particular night was also Jimmy Montgomery's debut. You know, Jimmy Montgomery became famous for the double save at Wembley in 73. So it was quite a night, really.
It was indeed. It was. So yeah. What can you remember of Clough as a player, particularly maybe that on that occasion, scoring three goals?
Well, I don't remember any of those goals, to be quite honest. But because the thing about Cloughy, his goals were always very similar, if you like. They were all within the penalty area.
Yeah.
For the vast majority. And he was just so sharp in the penalty area. You know, I don't ever remember him running with the ball. He never dribbled with the ball. If he got the ball outside the penalty area and he couldn't shoot, he would pass it. And then he'd move into the penalty area.
Yes.
And he was totally focused on scoring goals.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, I mean, I do remember there was two goals that stand out in my memory, particularly. One was, because it was totally different to the rest, he latched onto a through ball. He was running towards the penalty area. He flicked the ball over his head, over the defender, and volleyed it in from about the edge of the penalty area. If that had been caught on film, it would have been replayed over and over again. It was an amazing goal.
Yes, you know, like goal of the season.
He was capable. Mm. Yeah, he was capable of scoring goals like that. He just wasn't interested. I don't think he wanted to score. You know, it was volume he was after, not spectacular. The only other goal I remember was his last ever goal. After his injury, he did come back for three games in the first division. And in the last game, he scored against Leeds. But that was a totally different goal. The ball stuck on the goal line and he hit it in. So it was totally different. But that was more of his typical goal, to be quite honest, you know.
Yes, so he was a bit of a poacher, really.
Well, yeah, he was in that way. I mean, if you remember Jimmy Greaves, his mantra was pass the ball into the net, you know. Cloughy, no, none of that. Hit the ball as hard as you can into the net. He never messed about.
Yes.
And this other thing, you know, you often see at football games or you hear on the telly the commentator saying, oh, he was in two minds there, whether to shoot or score. He was never in two minds. I don't think ever in his life about anything he was ever in two minds.
No.
If he had the opportunity, you know, if he had the opportunity to shoot, he would shoot. So he didn't pass the ball. You know, not in the penalty area.
No.
If he could take a shot, he would take a shot. Yeah.
He was also a fairly good header of the ball as well, wasn't he?
He was. He did. I mean, he wasn't the tallest of bluffs. He was 5'10", I believe. But he had a good leap on him. And, of course, you didn't have the 6'4" giants in those days. The majority centre-halves were about 6 foot. So they didn't have an overwhelming advantage. Yeah. But, yeah, he was so focused on getting to the ball first, whether it was in the air or not. Yeah. That's what he was all about.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you remember him getting the ball deeper and then spreading it out to the wings.
That's all he did, yeah. If you can imagine the football pitch, you know, you've got the penalty area and you straighten the penalty area up to the halfway line.
Mm.
You've got a big rectangle. That was his area. He never moved up to that. You know, you never saw him out on the wing crossing the ball. That wasn't his game at all. That's what wingers were for. You know, and if he got the ball in that area and he couldn't turn and shoot, he would half turn and pass it to a winger and then head into the box. Or he would lay it off to one of his inside forwards and then run into the box, expecting them to pass it into the channels. It was simple. Yeah, he carried that style into management, didn't he?
He did.
It was all simple. You know, people have said to me over the years, well, he scored all his goals from 6 yard box. That's easy. You know, anybody can do that. I said, well, everybody can't do it because nobody else has. You know, and you think of all the games that have been played,
yeah,
all the centre forwards that have tried, and nobody can come close to his goal ratio. Nobody.
No, it was
fun. Some people have scored more because they played a lot more games.
Yeah.
But he was a phenomenon.
Yes.
And at the time, we didn't think of him as a genius. I think that came later when we saw what he was like as a manager. And I think with all geniuses, they all have the quirks, don't they? That's why they're geniuses, really.
Yes.
And he was a phenomenon.
I mean, when you look at his first season at Sunderland, it was about 34 goals and five hat-tricks.
I know.
You know, it's an incredible record.
Well, it was.
Do you think he deserved more than the two England caps that he...
Well, undoubtedly. But I was just reading, actually, a little bit earlier, and there's something that Alan Peacock, who used to be his strike partner at Middlesbrough, said.
Yeah.
He said when Cluffy was in the England setup, and Peacock was there as well, because he was a pretty good player, Peacock, he said he was telling people like Jimmy Greaves and Bobby Charlton, no, I'm not going out on the wing across the ball. That's not my job. Well, you know, you can see how he put people's backs up.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He knew what he wanted, but he wasn't prepared to play the game.
They couldn't find a way to play all three, could they, really, in the end? Greaves,
no,
Clough
no,
and Charlton.
No. Yeah, he was just him, and that was it.
Yeah.
And the thing about, and I know he had a lot of problems at Middlesbrough. I used to work with a lad in the 70s who was an apprentice at the same time as Cluffy. He was an apprentice when Cluffy was in the first team.
Right.
And he said sometimes he would take the apprentice to away games as much to carry the kit as anything. And he said he would be on the bus sometimes afterwards and there'd be ructions, him and the defenders. Come to blows. It wasn't unusual for Cluffy to have a split lip or a black eye in training. And when you look at the scores over that period of when he was at Middlesbrough, I mean, you got games like 6-6 away from home.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
I think on one occasion he said, well, you know, if I score 5 next time, maybe we'll win.
Maybe, yeah. But the other thing, all those goals he scored, you know, he didn't score a single penalty.
I read somewhere, actually, where he took a penalty early in his career and I think missed it, and that put him off completely.
No. Well, I saw him take a penalty for Sunderland and he missed it. It was either it was saved or he missed it, and he never took another one.
Well, there's more from Jim later, including the day he saw Cluffy suffer the injury which effectively cut short his playing career. You'll also hear from a former Cluffy player. But before that, I was delighted to make a guest appearance on the Raimundo Football Podcast, which covers world football. And here's an extract from the interview.
I've listened to a number of your episodes, and I really like your style and the fact that you focus in on that niche of Brian Clough and all the people who he's worked with and known a lot throughout the years. And tell me, though, when did it start? How long have you been doing that podcast? 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah, it's just over 5 years now. Yeah. I've been a journalist for 35 years, yeah. Newspaper and then radio. And when I sort of left being a radio journalist, I wanted to continue that sort of idea of interviewing people and hearing their stories, and thought that a Cluffy podcast might do well. So using some of the contacts I've built up over the years, I launched it in early 2021, not really knowing, you know, how it was going to go. I was new to podcasting, and podcasting was relatively new in those days as well. Yeah. And it just sort of took off, really. And the more the word went round, people enjoyed it, and I was able to get more guests on, former players, former journalists, fans who'd met him, and friends. And I'm fortunate I've been able to use some of the skills that I learned as a radio journalist to edit the production side of it as well.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased last year it was highly commended in the Independent Podcast Awards, which is for podcasts which are sort of free from corporate ties. They don't have big sponsors or anything like that.
And, yeah.
They're often like solo creators like yourself. And so I went to the ceremony in London, not really knowing what would happen, and got the highly commended award, which, you know, for a national UK award was wonderful. And then there was the worldwide sports podcast awards, when you're up against people like Gary Neville and the BBC and what have you. I was in the final for that. So to just reach the last 10 or 12 podcasts in the world for football was absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, brilliant. And how much have you enjoyed it, though? That's the question. You know, how much have you enjoyed it over the years? You know, just getting in touch with all these different people, that, you know, people like Viv Anderson, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, Tony Woodcock. Who was it that I listened to the other day? Brian Gunn. Yes. That was a good one. Yeah. How much have you enjoyed it?
It's been wonderful. I think just to spend time with them, if I can, I see them face to face. Obviously, sometimes geography means that's not possible. But just to be able to have that extended interview with them. And I always like to do plenty of research beforehand,
yeah,
to see if there's little stories that I can weave in or develop. And they seem to appreciate the fact that you do that research, especially I interviewed Franz Carr, and ironically, we did interview in the car. It was before a Forest match, and I'd got some archive material from his days at Forest, and he was absolutely gobsmacked by it, that there were all these cuttings that he'd never seen before. You know, it brought all the memories flooding back for him. And at that point, then you get some really good stories, because the guest for the podcast is instantly transported back in time and can vividly remember those days and come out with some nice memories. So, it's been a great experience. And as you say, it's not just former players, you know, people who've met him in everyday life. When John Robertson passed away, I interviewed John Lawson, the former journalist from the Nottingham Post,
yeah,
who had been, you know, a good friend of John's over the years. And it was a comment that John made to Cluffy, actually, all those years ago, that brought Robbo to Brian's attention. although John's very modest about it, John Lawson. But yeah, that was a great interview, and it was lovely looking back at those stories and paying tribute to the genius that was John Robertson, of course.
Exactly. I mean, what I always say is the way I like to do my podcast is that, you know, I try to avoid like what just happened last night in the Chelsea game, for example, you know, or what's happening, what Erling Haaland's just been up to. I try to look back beyond that, as you say, just, you know, to the 90s or the 80s or the 70s or whenever, 1920s, and just yes. find those bits of stories which have either went unnoticed at the time or have since just been forgotten about, and try and get them back up. And there's so yes. much scope for that, isn't there? And well, I mean, for me, because I cover world football, essentially everything. But for you, even just focusing yeah. in on Brian Clough, there's just a whole world of stories out there, isn't it, if you just go digging?
That's right. Well, I mean, the beauty for you, for your podcast, as you say, you've got such a wide scope to draw from, you know, yeah. with world football. I heard the one about South American football. And, you know, the sky's the limit. Someone who listened to my podcast said, you know, it's quite a niche subject, but I think that there's still plenty to go at, even all these years later. And the judges for the Independent Podcast Awards said it was fantastic that new stories were still being uncovered these days.
Yeah.
And they are there if you know the way to try and unearth them. By talking to people.
But I mean, Brian Clough is one of those characters, a bit like Harry Redknapp. Like, anytime someone says to me, oh, I've got a story about Harry Redknapp, I'm straight away all ears. Like, literally, I know that I'm going to enjoy it. And it's the same with Brian Clough, isn't it? Any story to do with Brian Clough, you're going to enjoy it, aren't you?
Exactly. And the good thing is, because I do various events when I go out and talk to audiences, and, you know, some of them are for charity, helping to raise money for good causes. Some have been for local libraries. And I think even if it's a story maybe one or two people have heard before, they're still hearing them again because they're so entertaining. Because what Cluffy got up to was so so amazing, some of the things, some of the stories. And yes, that there are still many to be told. And it's good hearing them from the horse's mouth, as it were, as well. Mm. You know, like Neil Webb. I mean, we've often heard the stories of players signing blank contracts when they join Forest. Cluffy would put a piece of paper in front of them and say, "They are, young man, sign that." Mm-hmm. And Neil Webb told me, yes, this is what happened to me. I was there and we'd sort of agreed terms, and he just puts this piece of paper in front of me and he said, "Seriously, you want me to sign a blank contract?" Mm-hmm. And Cluffy said, "Well, do you trust me, son?" Mm-hmm. And Webby said, "Well, yeah, I'm going to have to, aren't I?" But, you know, the next day, everything was drawn up just as they'd agreed, and that trust was paid in full. So it was almost a test, really, wasn't it, I guess, of Cluffy, that the players trusted him and he trusted the players.
I think that's exactly what it was by the sounds of it, yeah. I mean, let me just give you, I'll warn you in advance, my story about Brian Clough is probably the least exciting one you'll hear in a while, but I'll tell you nonetheless, seeing as you're such a fanatic, I'll tell you nonetheless. So let's see if you can guess it. I'll give you a couple of clues. So I'm from West Bridgeford. I was born in 1986, and I was around the age of probably around 12 when I met Brian Clough. So I'll let you guess as to where I may have bumped into him.
In the newsagents on Central Avenue in West Bridgeford.
Exactly. Yeah, and I walked in there, and at this time I wasn't really a. In fact, I was a Newcastle fan at this time because my dad's from Newcastle and I grew up a Newcastle fan. But at this time, I didn't really know who he was, actually. 1998, something like that, 1999 maybe. Hadn't got into Forest yet at that point. But yeah, I walked into the shop and he sat there. You know, he used to sit there on his chair, didn't he? Have you heard that one before?
He did, yes. It was amazing, really. You just go into this shop, this newsagent's shop, and there would be the amazing Brian Clough, this charismatic figure, just sitting there. chatting to customers as they came and went. And he loved it, didn't he? Did he talk to you?
He did, yeah, he did. I mean, as I say, you know what kids are like. You know what people are like when their kids are. And especially when they don't know who someone is. But at the end of the day, he spoke to me, and I do remember it, yeah. And I think, is it right that one of his sons owned the shop at the time?
Yes. Simon Clough. Yeah. And I often still see Simon there at the news agents on Central Avenue. Thankfully, he also sells one of my Cluffy books, which is supporting good causes as well. So, it's nice to see Simon, of course, who's working with Nigel at Mansfield.
Nice. Tell me then, Marcus, tell me about the books you've written. When did you write your first one?
Yes, the first one was about 2008. It reflected my whole story with Cluffy, how I sort of came to admire him, set up the tribute website and the knighthood campaign, and ultimately the statue that's in Nottingham now. I was the driving force behind that. So really? It sort of told the whole story. And Mrs. Clough wrote the foreword for it as well.
Wow! So you were actually the driving force behind this, because that is quite a legendary statue, isn't it, in Nottingham? I mean, that's been there for 20 years maybe, and it's truly it's a proper statue, isn't it? Perfectly placed.
Thank you. Yes, I put the fundraising group together because the Knighthood campaign didn't work out because Cluffy sadly passed away, and they don't give posthumous knighthoods, and I wanted to have a permanent tribute, and I thought, well, the statue would be good. And so I contacted Mrs. Clough, and she said it would be a nice idea. And Forrest said they had no plans for a statue at all. So I liaised with them and the city council, and we got a fundraising group together, just five or six people, didn't have a great deal of experience of fundraising. It was in the days before online fundraising. So we were holding events and selling merchandise. And we raised £70,000 in about 18 months.
Wow.
We thought that was it then. We thought our work was done. But then we had to commission the sculptor as well. So we had a sort of tendering process. And Les Johnson, who was based in Hampshire, he won the contract. Mainly because the bust he did of Clough's head, that the face was just fantastic.
It
got that twinkle in the eye, if you know what I mean. And Mrs. Clough loved that that bust. So he did the statue, and it was unveiled by Mrs. Clough in November 2008.
Yeah.
And 5,000 people came that winter's morning. It was a weekday morning, and it was just amazing to see how many people turned up, a lot of his former players as well. And it's sort of become a landmark in itself, hasn't it now? You often see people having selfies with it because it's so accessible. It's not high on a plinth, countless feet up in the air. People can walk up to it and pretend to, do that pose with the victory pose, the hands clasped in the air. It's been something to be very proud of, all the team that was involved in the fundraising appeal. We still have a reunion, and Brian very much in our thoughts as well, and it's nice that he's remembered in that way.
Excellent. And then there's the club shop right there as well, isn't there? And then there's the market square, obviously, for anyone who doesn't know. And that's where we celebrated our promotion. And I'm sure there was countless celebrations there in the past over the years with League Cup wins, etc. You know, that the European Cup and the league title. It's quite an area with a lot of Forest memories, isn't it? That small triangle of within 20 metres of each other.
That's right. Definitely a fitting location, I think. It's where those trophy victories were celebrated, when they were on the council house balcony. And we weren't quite sure where the statue was going to go when we first launched the campaign, But with the city council's help, they managed to get that spot for us. And yeah. it's been absolutely perfect. You know, I mean, some people say it should be at the ground, but it was for what he did for Nottingham as a city, really, not just Forest. And people who are not necessarily interested in football still look for it and have a photo with it. And people from around the world can learn more about him.
That's it. Tell me about your books, though, Marcus. So where is the best place to find them? Is it on Amazon or on your website?
Yeah, they're all on the website, brianclough.com. The latest one, Brian Clough, The Lost Tapes, sort of came out of the pandemic, really, when I was having a sort out at home and found a lot of old tapes and mini discs and DVDs. And there was, you know, long forgotten interviews that I found there, along with magazine articles and newspaper interviews. And that's raising money for Nottinghamshire Hospice and the NSPCC. It's been doing really well. And yes, you can buy them on the website. And I also, of course, talk about them at the various events that I hold. I'm going to be at the Loudoun Book Festival in June at Loudoun Village Hall. Which will be a great occasion with a special tribute also to John Robertson, of course, who passed away Christmas Day.
And my thanks to the Raimundo Football Podcast. That was an excerpt from episode 471. Still to come on The Green Jumper, memories of Boxing Day 1962 and a life-changing injury for Brian Clough. But before that, I've been speaking to a former Cloughy player who's now in Seattle in the United States. It was back in 2021 when I first interviewed Alan Hinton, who played for Clough at Derby. Well, I'm pleased to say I've caught up with him again, and we chatted about the time he came back to the UK for a special reunion to mark the anniversary of the 1972 title winners.
That was spectacular. I mean, it was not only seeing the players, but the fans. And all those fans used to bring these... They were bringing autograph books from those years and showing me the autographs I'd signed all those years ago. And, they were so lovely. And, you know, it was the typical Derby County fans, so excited to see polite. Some of them had five or six books they wanted me to sign. And
brilliant.
It was a lovely, lovely time, no question.
And I think, wasn't there an occasion where you sat next to somebody who started talking about Alan Hinton and they didn't realise they were sitting next to you?
I think I remember that story, I think. Not very well, but I remember saying, that's me! That's me! And it was hilarious. I remember it, yeah.
It was somebody who was a fan and they were talking about how great Alan Hinton was. And they
that's
didn't,
right. And,
they didn't realise it was you.
They didn't realise it was me, and then I said, "That's me."
And what
they were funny. They were lovely.
Yeah. How special was it for you to come back and meet up with those former teammates as well?
Well, you know, when you've won a championship in 72 and again in 75, and then I think we won the second division in 69, there's only one team can win the championships. And we were on that team. I was on with three times, and it's wonderful. And you know, we've all got some photographs, some press cuttings from those eras. And I remember the journalist Gerald Mortimer. He had the time of his life. Gerald, he loved it. He was the Derby Telegraph writer.
That's right,
Gerald Mortimer. He was he loved it, and he used to write nice stories for the media, for the fans, and. It was just a very, very special time.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, finally, when you won the championship in 72, you were in Mallorca when you found out, weren't you? And
the
photographer took a picture of you all wearing sombreros.
Well, what happened was getting television in those days was not easy. So we knew the game was going on. All the boys were in the bar and we were very, very much on edge because we wanted Liverpool to lose.
Yeah.
And in comes might have been John Robson or somebody, come running in saying, "We've won the league, we've won the league." And somebody grabbed him by the throat saying, "You're not taking the mickey out of us, are you?" And of course he wasn't. He was telling the truth. So, oh, we had a party that night. But then we flew back to Derby the next day. And of course there was a parade. And Eric Kitchen, the bus driver, was so proud to drive that bus around Derby and wave to the fans. It was a wonderful time.
Some great memories there from Alan Hinton. And talking about wonderful times, there's no doubt Cluffy enjoyed his playing days at Middlesbrough and Sunderland. Earlier, we heard memories of his goal-scoring achievements at Sunderland. Jim Wales has been recalling watching Brian at Roker Park. And he was there on the day the Sunderland centre-forward suffered the leg injury, which cut short his playing career. It was against Bury on Boxing Day 1962, as Brian was chasing a ball near the Bury goal and collided with the goalkeeper.
Yes, I was at that end, actually. I saw it quite clearly, yeah. I mean, I could see he was in pain, obviously, but, he just assumed, he'd be back, you know.
Yeah. He did his best to try and get back, certainly, but he didn't work out.
He did come back for three games, and I did see him play in his last game. And he scored, and as I say, I thought, my God, that's fine, he's back, but he must have known. He must have known himself, obviously.
Yes, I think the specialists warned him that it could be really serious if he tried to continue.
Right.
Obviously, he became a legendary manager. Do you wish that he'd been Sunderland's boss?
Oh, well, that would have helped. He should have been. You know, I think when he did retire, he became youth team coach. And the youth team got to the final of the FA Youth Cup two consecutive years. And they won it the second year. Yeah.
Yes, he had the knack of getting the best out of players, and that was a good example, I guess.
Yeah. I think, you know, he made it easy for players. Mm. I mean, it annoys me now when I see players coming on, substitutes coming on, and they stand there, and there's an assistant, but there was an iPad. Surely he knows what he's got to do.
Exactly, and too much information can just make it even more complicated, can't it, really? It should be a simple game, which, as you say, Cluffy demonstrated throughout his career. How will you remember Brian Clough when you look back?
Well, he's just a phenomenal goal scorer. He wasn't the sort of player that entertained you, if you like. We used to go to Roker Park expecting to win, which we did, to be fair, for those first two or three years I was going there, we used to win most games, and he used to score. But, you know, for the majority of football supporters, winning is entertainment enough.
Yes. If you leave the match feeling good, then that's a big bonus, isn't it?
That's all you want, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I did listen to one or two of your podcasts earlier, and there was a lad from Middlesbrough.
Yes.
And he said that some of the Middle supporters switched allegiance and started going to Roker Park when Cluffy left. But about 10 years earlier, when we bought Shackleton from Newcastle, similar thing happened.
Ah.
A lot of Newcastle supporters switched. But I don't think they necessarily switched allegiance. I think they just would maybe support to both games.
They wanted to see how he got on, yes.
He was an entertainer. That was Shackleton. He was an entertainer. You know, if he'd had the same focus as Cluffy, someone would have been winning trophies left, right and centre in the 50s. But he didn't have that focus.
I mean, Clough obviously enjoyed his time at Sunderland because he said, looking back, it was his happiest spell as a player.
Yeah.
And I think the fans really got behind him. And
He
appreciated that, yeah. And of course, he had his.
And he didn't have the same animosity with the other player. He might have had some. He probably did, but he couldn't accuse them of not trying.
And he had a wonderful testimonial as well at Sunderland.
He did, I missed that, unfortunately. Yeah.
To get over 30,000 people to come out for your testimonial is incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, I was very disappointed to miss that. But
you got some good memories there of seeing the great man in action. And scoring goals. That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. Can I just ask you a question?
Of course you can, Jim.
Your memories of him being as a manager.
Yes.
Right. But did you ever see Nigel play?
I did, yes. Yeah, in the late 80s, certainly, as Brian was sort of rebuilding his Forest sides.
I tell you, the funny thing is, no, I didn't used to go to Forest, but because Cluffy was manager, I did take an interest in them, you know.
Yes.
And Nigel used to drop, he was number nine as well, but he used to drop off and thread balls through.
His passing was just perfect, wasn't it?
It was very good. But do you know which other centre-forward player who was the pilot centre-forward for that sort of style? With Don Revy.
And Clough and Revy have some history, certainly.
Well, they were both Middlesbrough boys.
They were, yes. Yeah.
You know, and they both played for Sunderland, actually.
They had
a few years apart.
Yes, they had a fair bit in common, but a fair contrast as well, I think, in the way they went about things as managers. Yes.
Well,
yes.
That's right. Well, Revy was focused on winning at all costs. Well, Cluffy was focused on winning the right way.
Yes, true.
You know, he never argued with referees. Not many players did in those days, to be honest. But it was never an issue.
Well, I have to thank the Roker Report for putting me in touch with you, Jim.
That's all right.
For your Brian Clough memories, because they've done a little bit on his Sunderland days as well. And thanks for sharing your memories of Brian on the Green Jumper. It's been lovely talking to you.
You're very welcome. Listen, I can talk about Cloughy.
All day.
It's no hardship. Thanks very much, Brian.
Take care, Jim. Nice talking to you. And thanks to you for listening. And I'm pleased to say The Green Jumper now has listeners in more than 100 countries. Don't forget to also visit the tribute website, brianclough.com, where you can read more stories and buy my signed books supporting good causes. I hope you can join me next time for more memories of the great man in The Green Jumper.